Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, and welcome to the Professional Insight Podcast, Season 5. My name's Brandon Curry, and we'll wait till everyone gets on here and introduce everybody.
And I'm Jeff Collins.
nice ear pick. I'm Josh Bond.
Thank you.
Trevor Lindy.
You guys are, anyway, that's good. I did, yeah. Anyway,
better than a nose pick.
I didn't do a nose
pick. You're
wearing
the same clothes from last night. You notice that, Bondo?
No.
Yeah, you're wearing the same. You didn't even turn your shirt inside out to the reverse side.
No shit. You're right. All right.
Sleep in the car, buddy, or what?
No, I didn't sleep in the car. Hey, thanks everyone for tuning in and watching and listening and subscribing. First and foremost, thank you very much to our sponsors, Brand Boulevard, for continually supporting the podcast, and also to all of our listeners who support and listen and, you know, give us all these great ideas. And speaking of loyal listeners and people who always listen and give constructive criticism to the podcast, Mr. Jeff Chesbro is with us today, longtime listener, first time guest. Thanks for coming on, Mr. Chesbro.
Thanks for having me. And I love the word constructive. That means I've been a pain in the ass since you guys have been doing this. So
that's right.
Hey, it's great.
Very few people actually have, you know, we wouldn't be friends with you if you weren't, but I mean, like, you're very just honest, direct, and we've made tweaks and a lot of builds and stuff like that from a lot of our listeners, but specifically yourself, for the last 5 years now, 4.5 years now. So appreciate it. But we needed to get you on because I heard you on on another podcast, which we'll definitely promote. He does a great job. Really wanted to have our listeners tune in because we've had a couple questions over the years on board of directors, board governance, like how to operate. But let's can you just lead into your background? And, you know, what got you to where you are, your designations, et cetera, just so the listeners kind of, I mean, I think you live in infamy, but I mean, not everyone subscribes to the Jeff Chesbro Weekly Magazine.
There you go. First of all, it sounds like I missed a hell of a meeting last night.
It was good.
You did. It was nice. A good time.
Yeah. I haven't missed many. I missed one last night.
But Opa! Anyway,
yeah. You can't go wrong.
Great food. So always.
I mean, you folks around the table have known me a long time, some more than others, but for quite a long time. My background is a lot of volunteerism. I'm actually in a charity group with all you guys as well. So, it's my background is volunteerism, and that got me interested in a group called the JCs, St. Catharines JCs, a junior chamber, and got on the board, became the president, et cetera, and just started digging into how organizations are governed. We got trained very well on how to run meetings, good governance, etc. And I had the task of rewriting bylaws that hadn't been written in like 40 years. So our organization had allowed women in for probably 20 years, and the bylaws still stated no women. So I thought, if these were governed, we should probably change those. And that led to another thing, which put me on. I was vice chair of CAA, the Canadian Albion Association of Niagara, for a bunch of years. I was on a Canadian Credit Union, Meridian Credit Union's board for a bunch of years, and I currently am on a chair and an advisory board right now for a tech company. I'm on a investment board for a real estate company, and I am on my own board of directors and CEO of a company called Innovate Niagara. So my background as well, I am a charter director. I do have a university designation in this stuff, but you got to really live it to learn it. And I'm also involved in the Canadian Council of Innovators. I'm in their innovation governance program. They've got two levels, and I'm starting the second level next week after, something like that. So this is near and dear to me. Good governance is very important, as we've seen in the news lately.
Yeah, and also that's where you and I met, was the JCs.
It was. You were 18. You were 18.
20 some odd years ago. It was so nice. It was
Korea's calm compared to what it used to be, guys.
Wow. I was. Yeah, I know, right? Crazy.
Here he wasn't very calm on the weekend, though.
Oh, no. Yeah, those stories will, anyway.
I don't even know where to go. I had the joy of rooming with Brandon for 4 days last week, just for, you know.
That's in quotation is joy, is quotations.
Actually, it's easy. Curry's easy. He's easy like me, so we're good. We're just two peas in a pod.
With like one a quick question.
Like, I actually said at one point in the airport, Curry's like my third kid, and he's actually the stupid one. And all the guys love.
So if anyone actually is listening and you hear us bicker, it's totally normal. This has been 20 some odd years of Jeff and I, so that's totally.
I have to apply. This is interesting to me because I'm used to being on a little more buttoned up podcast. I was lucky enough. I do a morning roundtable on a regular AM station here, which I did this morning. Very different approach than what we're doing right now, folks. So
yeah, totally.
And the fact that I listen quite a bit and I know you folks, I know this is a little bit of a different all over the place conversation. So looking forward to it.
Yep.
Once we're done, you can let us know which one you enjoy more.
Yeah. I don't think you'll put his foot as well because he still likes those roundtables.
I do. It
might be an
off
the record thing.
Yeah, they keep coming back. You know what? We're lucky. Brandon's on the show as well, different times. I've actually been on with him, but we have a local legend named Tim Dennis here. Deserves a shout out. He is a community leader here and just does a great job. And I'm lucky enough to join his roundtables once every couple weeks.
Yeah, likewise. That's a very good shout out there. Tim has taken that morning roundtable, that morning show on 610 CKTB and made it the number one morning show AM and FM in Niagara, which is great. And he's a good supporter of our charity as well, which is really humbling to, you know, big supporter of that, him and Tom McConnell as well in the afternoon. So that's great to have that, to have good local content and good supporters. Now, the questions, and so anyone that's watching us live or listening to us live, please feel free in the chat, our usual listeners, if you have any questions or concerns. This is kind of, we'll just briefly touch on, like, what's, you know, obviously there's been a lot of governance and board of directors stuff in the news as of late. If you listen to Dean's podcast, he's covered it. A lot of other podcasts and news organizations have covered it. So we're not going to beat it to death. It's been covered. It's done. However, because you're a certified director, Jeff, with this, and I think a lot of questions have come up both on the morning roundtable and on just in general conversation and people that are listening and watching. Like how the heck do these things happen? Like, you know, like how do you properly structure an organization? Maybe is the first question, to prevent different things on boards from happening and stopping systemic, behavior.
Yeah, I mean, it's very boring because it starts with your bylaws. That's what actually governs the organization, how you onboard, offboard directors, how you correspond, all the rest of it. And if you don't follow those or don't understand those, they can be used as a weapon. And you've seen it. I'll go back to even looking at Rogers. I'm not sure how long ago that was now, but it was 6-8 months ago, folks.
Yeah.
But that was a boardroom battle that involved bylaws on how to govern and who gets control of the organization. And that's what the bylaws state. So as you folks know, I'm very much a process-based guy, and whether it leads you to the answer you want or not, that is the answer, unfortunately, and if you're on the wrong side of it. Bad things happen when people ignore the process and make decisions around it and don't utilize those bylaws and don't understand them and don't have prior actual practice. You've seen it, as you said, with the Rogers side, just it's used as a weapon. So for anyone looking to get involved in boards or understanding them, first of all, you A, have a passion for whatever you're getting involved in, whatever organization, but B, understand the rules, understand their financial statements, because you're on the hook when you get involved. If you join a board and it is a shit show as an organization, you are on the hook. And everyone says, well, we have directors and officers insurance. And Bondo, I know I'll, you can chime in more than I am, but you know, I went through a half module in directors college and like basically on insurance and things like that, because directors and officers liability insurance is not to protect the director, it's to protect the victim. And as we know, insurance companies don't lose. So if you are not, if you do not prove that you are, were acted in good faith and fiduciary responsibility, asked the right questions, you are liable. And that's what most folks don't really get, is that you're putting yourself out there on these things. The first actual 20 minutes of director's college for my charter designation is, why do you actually want to do this? You're nuts. You should not do this.
Really?
There's definitely exposures, personal exposures, even with director's liability insurance, for sure, Chess. Absolutely. I mean, it's director's liability insurance is going to provide you with some protection for the individual as well, right? Just because the payout goes to the victim, it still covers you from not having to pay it out of your pocket directly.
Unless you did not do your due diligence and exhibited financial responsibility. If you didn't ask the question and you were asleep at the wheel, sorry, but the insurance company's coming after you. If you did whatever you did and it led you, that's why the process. If you did your duty and you still made the wrong decision, as long as you did your duty, it doesn't mean that you have to make the right decision all the time. The insurance is there to protect it. But if you didn't do your duty and duty of care, then you're in trouble.
More so in a negligent.
Or you just weren't paying attention. You know what? I missed 3 meetings. I didn't read the minutes. I'm on this board because they wanted my name. I don't even know what's going on.
I understood that director's liability insurance would cover the director in that instance. So
not if they're negligible. Not if they don't. Yeah. It's not carte blanche. I don't know too many insurance companies that lose money.
Yeah. No,
I can speak for that. And no, they do not.
Right. Right. And if you didn't do your job, they're not protecting you. That's for arbitration court, as you know, Bondo, that you can decide whether that's positive or not. But you see it when folks get on boards and really have no clue. You know, oh, I just want to help the community, I want to do this. And that's a good and bad thing as well, is because when I end up, or other people with board experience end up with those folks, they don't necessarily understand the rules of engagement, or what sometimes it's things move a little quickly because you're not operational.
Those are committee people, right, Chez? Those should be committee people and not directors. And I think people confuse the two. Right. Yep. Way too often, because a director should very much know the intricacy of the organization, regardless of what it is. Right. Like, I mean, it's the paperwork is there. Like you said, you've got your bylaws. If you want to amend your bylaws, there's going to be a process right within there often enough to amend those bylaws. Right. But like you said, it's annoying and procedurally time consuming.
Yeah. And it's beyond, it is the bylaws and they guide it, but there's also how you do things, right? Like it was the least sexy thing I've ever done. I think it took a year and a half. We fortunately had a lawyer who was a member at the time and assisted me and gave me guidance through, but you know what? Not that I had to, but I got all the retired, like as many group of retired members, we call them senators.
Who was the lawyer?
Luciana Tamillo.
Nice. Good to give him a shout out if he was helping you out.
No, Luciana was, and we're going back, and I'm even worse with years now, but we're going back probably at least 15 years, at least.
Good.
It was one of the last things I did in the group, actually. I age out at 40. So it was maybe not that long ago then, 10 to all, but I lost my train of thought here.
SOPs? There's
two different types too. Some of these boards are operational. If it is a volunteer, the JCs, or if it is a community group raising money, those are, you know, operational. Then the others are governance boards, right? Those are the ones that, you know, you don't get involved in the day-to-day. It's very much a macro side of things. So you actually have to understand what you're getting involved in and what you want to get involved into.
So I guess that there's a couple key things that you've caught on to here. And these are kind of the lessons that you've told me over the years that we've known each other. And as a matter of fact, it's some things that you've mentioned, because you know, like I'm very involved in the community, like a lot of the guys on this podcast here, and you know, I've been asked to sit on a couple basically charity boards. Bondo, I was on one with you, and we will not mention any names or organizations, because we both stepped away from that organization for all the right reasons and for most of the right reasons that Chez is talking about. And then one recently during COVID, I was asked to hop on, and I lasted maybe for a cup of coffee. And Bondo, I and Chez, I both called you in regards to advice, because a lot of people don't realize that as a board of director, you can be liable for up to 2 years for any decisions that you've made within the organization. So any decision that you are making and or are negligent on or you ignore to everything that Jeff is saying, you got to, these are not willy-nilly boards, right? Like, you know, a lot of people do these things to build the resume, which and to also get involved in the community, which is all great things. But the sometimes the cons can outweigh the pros. And I quickly asked for advice from Bond and Jeff on what I should do. And both you gentlemen said, don't walk, run. Based on what was happening in the organization. And I mean, I appreciated that, but you want to touch on that a bit, Jeff, on the ignorance that sometimes people, you know, maybe expand on that. And what if you are asked to go onto a board, what are some of the things that you look out for?
Yeah. So don't walk, run is based on a very specific example that you're using.
Yes.
Sometimes you don't want to run or walk because the decisions that are made after you around that particular item that you're having an issue with, you're still involved with. So sometimes it's better to stay and see the matter through the end, because if not, the decisions are going to be made that you're going to wear egg on your face for. So just that's a caution as well, as it isn't a general, there aren't general policies here that I would say.
Stick around because you can voice a dissent, right? Essentially, Chess.
Yeah, you're in the minute saying it. You've said it. Everyone's hearing your voice, whether the vote goes your way or not. But if you run, you're dealing with the decisions that the others are making on your behalf, and you're still going to be eating it at the end of the day. But I say the biggest thing with boards is spend time up front getting to know the CEO, getting to know the dynamics of the board, getting to know how they operate. I was on vice chair of the CAA Niagara board for a bunch of years. I think I was on it 5 or 6 years. When I got first interviewed for that position, it was because I had actually turned down a high profile board of directors before that. And I'm not going to name it, but it's a very prominent board of directors that had governance issues. And I put my name forward because I thought, this is a big thing that I'd like to help fix. I was offered a position on the board, but at the same time, with all the governance issues, they were void of a general manager, and they went out and they hired the chair as the general manager of the organization. And I thought, you just did it again. Like, you just did exactly the stuff you're not supposed to be doing. So I actually said thanks but no thanks, and when interviewed at CAA, at the end of the panel, the gentleman, and I'll give him a shout out, great long-standing member of the community, and Bruno Iafredi, Bruno said, I don't know who got interviewed here, you or us, because I was think I asked them way more questions about the organization than they did me. So you really need to spend your time, and I love member-based organizations. For me and CA in our region, as I think 130,000 members out of 450,000 people here, so it's a very involved organization in the community. And as I said, same with Meridian. I love member-based organizations. So that's near and dear to me. That's why I got involved. I get asked to join quite, I got an email at 10 o'clock today asking me to join a board, that volunteer one in the community this time. But it's, you can only do so many. When I see those folks with like 8 boards, it's, you're not doing anyone any service except building your resume.
I'm waiting to see you on a fireman's calendar.
Now,
that's what we should do, our professional insight calendar, eh? All of us in our
nobody wants to see us on a calendar at all. Nobody.
I think we could raise money not to do it.
Oh, yeah.
We could do it not to. People would pay not to do that.
Either that, start or sending us money so we don't do it.
Hey, just an idea, though, guys.
Dad bods are in style now, eh? Dad bod calendar.
Why don't we throw my trailer in for the summer months, right? But different aspects of the trailer, like a photo of the washroom. And
can we use the washroom? Wow.
No.
Okay.
Oh
no.
Well, we be naked?
We're
going
to throw shit at his trailer.
Oh my god! Throw it at his trailer. I don't understand it. Good news, though, on the side note, we do have, I don't know where it is, Rookie, if you can put it up, but I think we got stuff on the shop. You can buy our shirts or something in our cups.
we got a couple of fun shirts.
Put shitting in his trailer,
yeah.
Eh?
All right. He said, give me a second. So we will
definitely. We're going to retire off his trailer. shitting in it.
Yeah, that'd be hilarious. There's a hashtag Scrotox one. There's the don't shit my trailer one.
I think we need a new one about the dad bod calendar. I think that would make some money.
Hashtag dad bod. That would be a good money. One. Hashtag dad bod. Professional insight. Because we all definitely have dad bods. But I think the only one that's saying that dad bods are sexy are the people with dad bods. So
Heard it was a thing. It was a thing.
Oh, it's a thing? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I was really cut and then I decided to go to the dad bod because of that.
Yeah.
I was in great shape.
You were in great shape, and then you just thought dad bods are in. I'm gonna let myself go.
Gotta follow the trends.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I was ahead of the trend there, Colin.
you're
the trailblazer. Yeah, you're the trailblazer. You started it all.
Yeah.
We'll put a poll. Put a poll up.
Yeah,
Rookie, put a poll up. Dad bod calendar. Let's
dad
see if
bod
these guys
calendar,
got the balls
yes no.
to put it up. We'll get 12 guys with terrible bodies and
yeah, that'd
mosquitoes.
Be freaking hilarious, actually. Okay,
Someone
so
comes
if
in
you're
with
starting,
a Borat.
If you're starting an organization, this is more to Bondo and to Chez. He's got the merch, so he's going to put that up. I don't know how he's going to do that, but oh, there he is. Oh, look at that.
That
I just
awesome.
Shit in Trevor's trailer.
I am buying that shirt.
We should buy that for Trevor's family. Eh? We can give it to Trevor's family for it, and they can all shit
oh
in
Oh, my
it.
God. That's hilarious. Don't shit one. In the trailer. Yeah, that's good.
Oh, that's
I
good.
Like that.
I like him, too.
Back. Little piece of shit on the okay. back or something.
This is good.
Where the hell did we get that model though? Like, what the hell? Seriously?
I don't know.
Is
it's
that
a
mannequin?
Stock model. Yeah, it's a mannequin. I don't know.
Clearly but doesn't have a dad bod.
Definitely doesn't have a dad bod.
We need one. We need a new one that says hashtag dad bod.
You never that know. They could shape. Be those true tees that are really cut well.
Right.
It does, yeah. Unis- it does say unisex.
It's like a corset. It just there sucks. You go. Like Spanx.
So go to the Dean Blundell website. Network website, and you can click on the shop and you can buy them there. Thanks to everyone.
is a nice plug for our
yeah.
merchandise.
I'm pretty pumped. We got merch. This is pretty cool. What was it going
to
say? The
I still want to see Chez in a calendar. That's all.
Oh, that's that. That'd be good. That'd be good.
I'll do one of the cold months.
couple. Turkey pointers coming out, eh?
Like just doing this.
I thought it was an account for shrinkage.
Yeah.
Don't be ashamed of shrinkage. It happens, guys.
It happens.
Part
it's
of life.
Right. It's cold. It's cold.
You
got to
accept
right?
it.
So
if do women actually think that's a joke, though?
The shrinkage?
What? Yeah. I think it's like they think it's like a fake thing.
No, I show my wife all the time. She loves it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. But some girls, for sure.
She loves it.
She loves it.
Just don't ask her.
She loves the shrinkage in dad bod. That's great.
Yeah, she loves the shrinkage.
I got the
she
right woman for me, I tell you.
Look at the little turtle.
Yeah, she's. Yeah. You might want to take her to an optometrist, bud.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
No, you don't.
Yeah. I don't.
Yeah. So. Back to the that was a nice little detour talking about shrinkage and our merch store.
I got to bring something to the party, guys. So.
No, that's fine. But here's something like in all seriousness, here's something Collins and Lindy and I, we've all started companies and same I know Chez you have and Bondo yourself with your LLP and stuff like that. But when you this is more to Chez and Bond at the same time, it's just like, what are the things that people should really look out for when opening and creating a corporation or you do need a board of directors? And maybe it's not so much like a proprietorship, but like definitely where it's a multi member organization or, you're going to have more than just a president, like, a chair and a secretary. It's going to be like, several board members. What are some of the things that you guys suggest should be in the bylaws that you've seen missed? And you've walked up and you're like, wait a second, like what the, you don't have a this, that. And I think Chez, you said one time you joined an organization and they didn't have even director's insurance.
Yeah. There's interesting there's stuff with that. And Bondo, I don't know. Do you want to go from the legal side first, Bondo?
No, you go, Chez. There's so many different facets. Yeah. That I've seen missed in your bylaws, right? Like, I mean, I can talk at length from the exiting of a director to the length and term of directors. Like, I mean, it's your Bible. You know what I mean? It's your bylaws are your Bible. you know, for your corporation. It should be structured as such. Anyways, no, you go, Chez.
So a little bit of my background, I've been involved in working in a lot of tech companies for a lot of years. I exited my last company in 2008. Actually still in business with two of the founders. The three of us are still working together and actually on an advisory tech board together and things like that. It was a family decision, not a life decision. We had taken a company, become one of the fastest growing companies in Canada back in early 2000s. And I stepped away for family reasons. And I was lucky enough to start an organization that I work at now called Innovate Niagara. So we work with with startups, a lot in the tech field. I shouldn't say tech startups. And I was fortunate enough that it sounds stupid, but I left a startup to start a startup to help startups, is essentially what I did. And it was myself and a lawyer, shout out Joe McCallum. So it was the two of us, and there was no bank account and no accountant, no nothing. It was literally, we had Letters Patent, which is the incorporation for a not-for-profit, and I had to build the bylaws out. So once again, it's building that, as you said, Bono, building that Bible on how you're going to interact. And, you know, writing in, we had partners, we had the university in our city here in the region and our college, all founding partners in this organization. So, you know, how do you write the bylaws to add and subtract those folks? And how do you pick a chair and all the rest of it? So I had the joy of doing these, and we've revised them many times over the years. Not a ton. I mean, the bylaws shouldn't be something that you know, are looking at every day. But
if they're done well, right?
Correct. And time does change things, right? And there are cruxes, you know, when you have not-for-profits, there's going to be little things that are, you know, the things you know in your bylaws that don't necessarily make sense, but they are the way they are. And we have, you know, we've got one in our bylaws that our partner institutions will always have a seat. Now it's up to them to put the name forward of who they'd like to take their seat.
Yep.
Doesn't mean our board of directors has to accept that person. They can kick them back and say, nope, we don't want that person. We can send someone else. So it's very important, obviously, on who you have and what you have and how you build that out. So as I said, I've been fortunate enough that I've been through this in a real life example to go through this and actually do this and build it out. And that's, you know, we have exited board members. We have exited. I mean, I've got tons of stories on how these were actually used. You know, and you got to know the rules, because when board members decide that they're above the bylaws, there's some challenges.
So. I had one up north.
When I was
working, and it had to deal with a not-for-profit. I believe it was First Nation corporation, and. I guess the way that some of these boards are structured is it's familial, right? So there's two large families, and one family vote, if they've got a bigger majority, they vote in, you know, their family members, and they run the corporation, right? So, and it gets really, 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 really nasty. And it got to a point where there were essentially threats, you know, made on other people's lives, and like this huge membership driven get together to amend the bylaws, essentially. And it gets nasty, right? Depending on who's at the table and what's in the paperwork. So a good indication, obviously, first, you know, like Chez said, read the mission statement, you know, make sure it aligns with you, but just don't stop there to be a director. You know, read the bylaws, right? Read the bylaws and really understand how the corporation is structured, because you are going to be accountable or partially accountable for that corporation.
Yeah.
See, I got a question for you guys. You, Bond, you and Curry both helped me very much with my bylaws and all that when we Form Bridge and Quarry and all that. Can you guys say some crucial bylaws you'd say, whether it be, you know, super important that you have to do in any time of a startup? What would you say? I know there's a
buy-sell. Yeah, you got to get your buy.
What other stuff?
Term limits.
Yeah, I'll talk about.
Sorry, Bondo, you go ahead.
No, these are the things I want to know, because I do represent other people that are starting up as build companies too. And obviously I always guide them to you guys anyways, but what would you say to them is crucial when you're starting up? Yeah, term limits. What else?
It depends. Term limits. When I say that, more community-based organizations, as far as owner-based and proprietor-based.
Yeah, right.
But
yeah.
If I go in an organization, they don't have to, I've been on. They don't have term limits. And it's, you know, once you're past 10, 12 years, you're closer to the organization than the CEO is. And you know, I was at a retirement ceremony for a group I was involved with for two board members, and they had a combined 54 years experience, both great community folks. But I cringed. I was the only one going, ugh, like, yee. And I was involved with implementing term limits. It's you know, you need to have that structure that these people are not lifers. And, you know, and that's where you run into, you know, the hands getting the cookie jar and the rest of it. It becomes a little too close. And so to your point, Jeff, not necessarily when you're building a startup and the rest of it, although those are part of the process. But yeah, it depends on the maturity of the organization. I'll say it's very dependent on that and ownership share. Right.
Yeah.
On over to you.
From more the private sector, Corp, Jeff, what we're going to do is we're going to do their bylaw number one, bylaw number two. Number two is usually their borrowing bylaw. And not bylaw number one is the structure bylaw, right? So how the organization conducts business.
The buy-sell agreement, too. You guys made me push that through. Can you explain
that's
that?
A shareholder's agreement.
Huge. Yeah. That's the first thing you want to do. That's
what you guys made sure I did it. Can you guys explain it more in detail for the viewers?
Now, I'm going to drive a distinction here because there's two types of corporate entities. Jeff operates in the for-profit. Jeff Collins operates in the for-profit. Jeff Chesbro operates in the not-for-profit most instances.
Depending. I operate in both worlds, but it depends on
correct.
What time I'm wearing,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
I sit on for-profit and not-for-profit boards.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't mean to drive a hard distinction with you, Chezzy, but and the structure of the entity is completely different when it's for-profit and not-for-profit. Right?
Right.
So the for-profit, you're looking at bylaw number one, bylaw number two. Your lawyer is normally going to take care of that when they're incorporating the entity, Jeff.
Okay.
So, Jeff, I've used the buy sell. So, my last company we had, there was three partners, and we had there's a couple things. We had life insurance on each person.
Really?
Yep. On each person in the organization.
You got Curry. Curry's piqued interest.
for some reason, I had $200,000 more than my two other partners, which always make me.
On your life?
Yeah, in my life. I had $200,000 more than both of them. So I always question. It's still a joke today. They never really straightened it why that is. But
they always fed you the extra drink, eh?
And they were all 1.2 and I was 1.4. And this is going back to like 15 years. So
it must have been because you were the trailblazer.
Oh, must have been. I had 2 years. I was 2 years older than both of them. That's
there
a joke.
That's why.
But but the idea with that was, you know, it's your prenup. You know the how to get out of it before it goes, and whether it goes south, whether it doesn't. Like, it wasn't a business decision for me when I left my organization. It's, you know, we were in Toronto, Detroit. Our head office was in Sarnia, and we were in Niagara. And I used to wake up every Monday and leave the house at 5:15 to be in Sarnia for a few days, and then maybe in Detroit, maybe in Toronto. I had children. It was not.
Yeah,
that part of my life, I had regrown where the operational side of the business could handle up to 50 employees. We were at about 25 at the time. So I moved into sales and I was replaceable.
You're crazy.
Yeah. So it was like, it was a life decision, but you know what? I signed the buy seller lawyer's office, hugged my old business partners and their dad was our lawyer. And he said, you know what? You guys are going to be in business together. Timing is everything. And you know, here we are a month ago. I spent time in Sarnia, just my old business partner's place, and three of us are together in another organization now that we invested in, sit on a board on. So it makes it easy to get out when you know, like, this is what it is. And for those of you listening on buy sell is that, you know, if Collins and I are partners and I want to get out, I'm dumbing this down, Bondo, please jump in.
Yeah.
But you know 100%. What? If I want to get out, if I want to get out. And the offer is made that, you know, a dollar a share, the person who is receiving the offer has the opportunity to say, okay, a dollar a share, I'll take it and I'll take yours for that buck. So it gives the opportunity to say, you know, so that someone isn't submarining someone, but, you know, negotiating in good faith, I'll say. And if it's ugly, it's ugly anyways. So the bylaws are going to help, the buy sell is going to help, but you're still going to have call Bondo's friends and it's going to get ugly. But that's the purpose of the buy sell is that we know.
Buy sell is commonly referred to as a shotgun clause too.
You got it. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So prenup's the best way to put it, kind of, right? It's more or less.
It's prenup, but once it hits, to Bono's point, it's a shotgun clause. I offer you a dollar. I want your shares. You say, you know what? Ah, I like that deal. I'm going to give you the dollar, and I get to have all your shares. So whoever makes the offer first is actually the one that doesn't decide. It's the one who gets the offer that says, huh, you want to give me 50 cent dollars? I'll take that. See you later. And
forces the first piece of person to be reasonable, though.
Yeah, it 100% does, right? So if I offered you Collins a buck 25 and you're like, I wouldn't go over a buck. Yeah, I'll give you a buck 25. Take my shares for a buck 25.
See ya.
Yeah, I'm out. So that's what it does, because, you know, it's easier, as you know, to figure things out when you're getting along. And usually at the beginning, when you're doing things like buy, sell and things like that, it's the honeymoon phase. We're in business together. We're going to rule the world. It's when, you know, when the receivables don't come in and your four POs get dropped and the rest of it, that's not the time to be trying to negotiate how to do an exit.
Now, the other thing piece is the one thing I heavily, Collins, you still have more to go, but anyway, is the insurance side of the business, because we've seen, and Bond and Chez have both seen, this happen where one of the business partners die. And a lot of people don't realize this, is that if your bylaws are not structured properly and you don't have a proper buy sell agreement and the, you know, there's no exiting clause and et cetera, and one of the partners becomes critically ill or disabled, or, you know, unfortunately passes away, you need insurance and critical illness and disability insurance of some shape, way, or form that can make the organization whole, so that you're not scrambling to find the money to pay the estate that owns the shares. Or in some cases, and this is what happened to a case that we turned around and we dealt with in the Niagara region. One of the business partners passed away, one of three, and the wife was the person who received the shares of the deceased partner, and under no circumstances did they want the wife didn't want anything to do with the business, and quite frankly, you know, she wanted to be bought out at the fair market value. Now, with that being said, they didn't have any insurance. They didn't listen to my business partner, Doug, at the time. And so they had to go in and they had to basically finance it through a bank and turn around and take a massive loan out and buy out the wife. Then the recession hit, 2008-2009. And so now you're going into a recession with massive amounts of debt. Everyone, as we know, in 2008-2009-2010, everything came to a screeching halt, and especially around the financing pieces, a lot of loans got called. And so then now you have this loan, you have business slowing down, you have this loan that is outstanding, the bank wants payments, you can't make those payments. And then the next thing you know, you've got, they went bankrupt. And through no fault of their own, but they just didn't have the right mechanisms in place in order to finance a buy, sell, and a buyout. It's mutually exclusive. So the life insurance, critical illness, or disability insurance that you have on yourself and your family, that's your own. Think of it as your own corporation, your own entity. And then the buy, sell insurance and disability and critical illness that's in place in the entity itself, they're mutually exclusive, because the organization is the one that receives the benefit and has then the liquid cash to pay out the shares, either on a promissory note or a redeemable share basis. I don't know, Bondo and Chef, do you want to maybe... Chesbro, do you want to talk
just
about
call
that?
Me or Jeff. Maybe... That's a new one.
Jeff. Who's yeah, Jeff.
Yeah. I was gonna say Chez, and then it went Jeff and Chez. Chef.
Chef.
Chef. We're gonna Jeff. Call you Chef from now.
Chef. Chef. See, the purpose of our insurance, to be honest with you, was twofold. Is we weren't paying ourselves anything. It's a startup. So we would, at that point, you know, we would rather hire employee 26 than pay ourselves at that point. That was just our choice in investing in the company. So the purpose was twofold, is A, to buy out the partner, spouse, whoever, because our bylaw, like the way our corporation was structured, the spouse or plus one or whatever was not getting involved in the business. That was the way it was written. So if I say something happens to me, the idea was I have to be replaced. That work I do at the organization is not going away. So we have to compensate someone at fair market value because I was doing it for nothing. You know, we had to pay, we had a benchmark to say if any one of us goes, this is what it's going to cost to actually hire someone.
Can you cover that with key person insurance as well?
I'll ask Curry on that. This is just what we handled it.
I'm just throwing that out there because
probably there's probably different ways. At this time, it was like, you know, 1922, I think, was when this happened because I'm 9900. But it was to pay the partner or spouse or estate, we'll say the estate, and B, hire the replacement to keep the company going. Because, you know, we unfortunately, you know, we went through, we had a lot of family at the company I was at. And unfortunately, you know, I lived with my one business partner in Sarnia for 5 years. And we had a, you know, his 28-year-old brother unfortunately passed away, who was a big part and his family's a big part. And it was on the West Coast. So my business partner was gone for a couple months. I went from, and this is the real of a startup. I would live during the week at his house with his wife. And then I would go home on the weekend with my wife at the time and live there. And then I would go because he was on the West Coast. They had businesses there he had to deal with. And that's, you were married, those folks. I answered the door at 3 o'clock in the morning to find out his brother had passed. By 7 o'clock, I sat down with him for an hour to figure out what I was taking off his plate because he was flying out at like 10 o'clock to go to BC. So it's like, everyone's like, it's, you know, all the, you're doing everything with these folks. So to have all these safeguards in place and to understand this stuff is, to me, just very, very important because life, like, you're married to these folks.
Well, and I think that's it. There's a lot of ignorance that surrounds that. And the question initially was key person. So to your point, Bondo, the key person insurance is for a key employee that is not a shareholder of the organization.
Okay.
So, right. So like Jeff and his two business partners can't take key person insurance out on themselves because there's a conflict of interest, right?
Okay.
Like, are you talking about Jeff or Jeff? Which Jeff?
Both. He now has a dual personality.
So far, I've been called Jeff, Chef, and Chez, and Chezzy. Yeah. So I got four names so far on here.
That means you're doing good. The more nicknames, the better you are.
Yeah, and none of them are profane. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Wait until some of our listeners and viewers give you a nickname. No,
Uncle Chez.
Yeah,
also known as Uncle Chez. Here we go. Keep it going,
Uncle
boys.
Chez.
You see.
But so that's the key. So that's why when it comes to disability, you can do disability insurance on a partner, but you can't. But that partner is obviously a key person, so that can't be they cancel each other out. So, and I know this because I've had a couple clients ask me that. And basically go, hey, can I do key person insurance on myself? No, because there's a conflict of interest that you would claim on that insurance policy because you're a key person. But
can you pay it to a corporate entity?
The corporation can take like disability insurance out on somebody. Yes. Or critical illness. So basically when a corporation takes out or is the insured or the owner of the policy, we call that the insured, and the person who is insured, which is the life insured, and then the beneficiary is automatically the corporation, as long as the corporation is the owner and the payor, and then it goes back into the corp. Same with critical illness and same with disability. For another episode, the life insurance is the one that can flow through the capital dividend account, assuming that there's no adjusted cost base, but the critical illness and disability can't go through the CDA.
That's probably something that we should revisit. It's something that you did go to that you spoke at in depth about a couple of years back, but it's so important that it's probably something that would be prudent for an episode, especially now on the new platform too, Brett.
Okay, definitely. We can definitely do that for sure. But so it is important that a buy sell is written down, an execution clause is written down. But then on top of that, there is money set aside. And because in some cases, the person might be not insurable. That's quite possible. Well, then once you go through that process and you find out that person is not insurable, okay, well, then now you know that there is a, and you got to remember, to Jeff's Jeff Chesbro's point, Chezzy, Uncle Chez, to his point at the beginning of this episode, and that was insurance companies don't lose money. They're not in the business to lose money. They're in the business to make money. And so if they're not willing to insure somebody, what does that tell you? That means they're putting them on an actuary table and going, yeah, that's way too much risk there for whatever reason. Whatever reason. So you as your business partner has to sit there and go, okay, there's a higher probability holding everything else constant. And let's say I'm in business with Josh, that Josh is going to die before me because of his health concerns or whatever he does in his life. It's none of my business, but I need to know that. So therefore, now the corporation can write a bylaw to earmark money to set aside, what you can do, even in a not-for-profit. But there needs to be procedures in place to earmark money that is only to be used to buy out shares of the organization if need be. And that's why I strongly encourage all organizations to go through that. And this is that's the sweet spot that our organization likes to kind of meddle in, because it's something that, you know, we find extremely interesting and what have you.
They're very good points, Curry. And I mean, listen, our listeners, we can talk to her blue in the face. We can bring Chezzy on and have you explain it to. Listen, you got to talk to people, right? You got to talk to your financial advisors. You got to talk to other board members. If you're looking to be a board member, you got to have good paperwork, right? You got to look at the paperwork and make sure that it's good, right? So go speak to your professionals so that they can give you assistance and guidance in terms of what is good and what's shit, right? Because that's what they're paid for. Don't be cheap. Don't be cheap on this stuff, people, right? Don't be cheap. Don't be cheap on your paperwork. Yeah. Don't be cheap on covering one another in terms of what happens in the event of an exit strategy, right? Yeah.
I deal with startups all the time. I've signed on Friday afternoons. I've signed, been the witness for share sales. I've seen it all. And what I always tell folks is stop looking at legals as a fee. And it's an investment. And I've always said that. And people are like, what are you talking about? Legal fees are investment. They're an investment in your future. These are not things you need to look at and go, oh, that costs this. I got to cut this. Those are the things that actually invest in the actual future growth of your company, because you may need to exit a partner. A partner may exit. There's a 100% million reasons why. As I said, mine wasn't a business decision. It was a family decision. It was like, you know, when I got off a 2-hour call with my old business partners, and I walked out of the room and I looked at my now ex-wife. I said, I think I just sold all my shares. And she said, well, what are you going to do now? And I said, I don't know. I'll figure it out. And within 2 weeks, I had started Innovate. But it was a discussion with my partners where they said, you know, I don't know. I had children before them and they were starting to have kids. And my one partner said, I don't know how you did it with one kid. Never mind two. Because, my son, who was probably 5 at the time, was waking up at 5 o'clock, 5:15 to make sure he saw me before I left. And I'm like, this is not life, right? Like, life's too short. But we had invested in those beforehand. So it was all right. So I keep telling people, any startup, it's an investment in your future. Legals are not viewed as fees. Now, legals can be viewed as fees later on when you get in trouble or whatever, but setting up your corporation, paper it, as Bondo said.
But also your insurances, get those in place. Get those in place, right? Because you know what? We never know what's going to happen. And we know we're all going to die. Right? Yeah. I hate to be morbid, but it's going to happen.
Well, I mean, we all experience it. One of our closest buddies who's a doctor, had a stroke 6 years ago, the healthiest guy we all know. I had worked out with him in the morning, and our other buddy was getting worked on by him at lunch, and it happened. And if you asked anyone, I probably would have been more first out of the gang we had out than last. And, you know, it's important. And as Curry knows, the first thing that we did is he talked to us about critical insurance, all of us as our group. I have it now, critical illness. So I investigated after the fact, because it happened. You know, we had a friend with some serious issues that no one saw coming.
At a young age.
36.
And, you know, I say this facetiously, you know, in a way to prove it, but like the year that happened, business was good that year because it scared the living crap out of all of our friends, because that's how healthy Scotty was. Yeah. Like, that's how healthy he was. And we were just like, if that guy can have a stroke, anybody, any of us can. And,
I worked out with him that morning, and I had been, as you guys know, I was in a boxing event So for months, probably 6 months, I trained with him every morning. And then he would fix me and put me back together. And he had bought me a massage at his clinic to use after the fight. I was back in there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and couldn't figure out what was going on. I'd seen him hours later. And the time I was in there, he was actually on a table in Hamilton getting worked on. So, you know, it was, I think it was an awakening for all of us to say like, holy shit, like if the healthiest guy in the world is, this is, you know, this is real.
Did you the MS boxing event? Was that what it was?
Yeah, I did that.
That's a really cool event.
Yeah, I was fortunate. Did you win? I did not win. I gave it a hell of a shot. A couple of these guys walked me to the ring.
The thing
I was proud of is I never asked for money personally to raise money. I've never done it ever. I support Wise Guys. I support charities. I was always involved in the JCs and doing things for Big Brothers, but never had said, hey, can you sponsor me? And I raised the most money at any boxer out of the whatever 20 boxers.
So you did win. You did win then. That's good.
In that case, I think I did. It was awesome. And I was fortunate enough that Brandon and Josh, along with about six or seven other buddies, walked me out to the ring, all involved with the Wise Guys charity, hence my name, Wise Ass.
I wasn't there. I just got a hat.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, bud. There was.
I wish I was.
I wouldn't recommend having your first fight in front of 1,500 people. It was a sanctioned boxing match, so I'm 0-1 as an amateur boxer in the province of Ontario. And getting to my first fight at 42 is probably also something I wouldn't recommend. I said it was my first sober fight in 20 years. Like,
Chesney didn't win. The charities won.
Yeah. Hey,
you shouldn't have been sober.
You know what? We gave it a good the guy and I gave it a good tilt. Nodded at the end of it. I didn't come up it on top. Also, my strategy was a little off because he was 30 pounds heavier than I am. We had to get within 10. So the week and a half before the fight, I was eating nothing but like gnocchi bolognese, which was not – I should have fought about 15 pounds lighter than I did.
Yeah. It is what a little bit of whiskey in you.
You got it. I still box 3 times a week though. So
that's good. Still good.
That's fantastic.
Let's sign up Curry or Bondo to go against each other.
I wouldn't go with Bondo, but I'd spar with Curry for sure.
We do that already. Why would we? Like, we just
I know,
do
but
that.
If I got to hit you, it feels so good sometimes.
That could be another poll. We could raise some money for that.
We were checking out the hotel, and he almost got knocked out actually on Sunday. So,
Jesus. He gets so angry. He gets so angry.
Oh, guys, I could tell you Curry stories right now. You're just howling. And sorry to the audience, but this is like so laser focused. You can tell him anything doesn't matter. And then he goes, shiny thing, squirrel. It's he's yelling at me to meet him with the check, and then he's nowhere to be found.
Yeah, no, it was a good resort. What could you say? Anyway. What was it gonna? So I guess to anyone that doesn't have a buy sell agreement in place or properly funded, cons. Can you give me examples of something that's happened that like you know because I do hear this all the time. Oh, it's too expensive or all this, but it's some serious shit. Like guys, like. I like it's not something to shake a stick at. Like, do you have any examples, Chez or Bondo, where you've seen it happen, and it a similar example to me, like maybe a disabled partner or anything of that nature.
I'm not uninsured here. Let's not push that. I do have insurance. I've got
you do
insurance. I'm not going to go broke if I die. My family's not going to be in the poverty stick here like that. So let's ease up a little bit here. You know, it's not terrible. Uh-huh. I don't need to
Jill's
die with $7 million in my wife's pocket, you know. So ease up a bit. Ease up.
If you asked her, she might feel otherwise, though.
I think she'd feel otherwise.
Well, she doesn't need to be living with Elon Musk, you know, if I pass away here. Like, we don't need to give incentive to kill me.
I have the same principles as you, Colin.
I know.
Like, although I do have insurance with Brandon. Actually, responsibly, it goes with your life too. I've had insurance. I've been divorced about 10 years, and I've had insurance on myself and my ex-wife for 10 years because, you know, we're both a policyholder. Something happens to me, something happens to her. The kids still need to be raised, right? Yeah. But to my point with Curry, like I actually brought it back because I thought, oh my God, like everyone's going to be partying like rock stars when I'm gone here. So it was the same thing. I was worth more dead.
There's just too much incentive. You're giving the wife to, give you some extra food and some that extra beer.
And no one would
make
be
it
like,
last
oh,
to die.
It would be, Chez pissed me off, and no one's going to doubt that. It's not going to be like, he's such a quiet, nice, calm guy.
Yeah.
Not too much. You know,
Chez just has to be careful if he's getting invited to go skydiving or bungee jumping.
Yeah, exactly.
There might be another.
That's when I get my 50th birthday. Here's some skydiving.
Curry went scuba eating the other day, and I tried to give the instructor a couple extra dollars to weigh down the boots, but he wouldn't do it.
Lessen the tank a little bit, eh?
Yeah. I ran out of air 5 minutes in. What the hell happened?
Yeah.
Can't you get a last to die policy, though?
Yes, you can. Yeah. There's a joint last.
I'll cover you for the wife. Make sure it goes to the kids.
There's a bunch of different things that you can do. But the fact of the matter is I've seen it way too often, you know, and it can sink a corporation. Like I said, your corporation and your personal life are mutually exclusive. You know, your business partner
should be.
Needs to have the money to pay out the estate of the shares of the deceased or critically ill or disabled partner in order to keep moving on. Otherwise,
that is a second wife. It really is, right? Like, you're married twice if you got a business partner.
100% well, you're married.
In your case, you got to buy it. If something happens to your partner or pseudo, like the other way, you got to buy out a book too, right?
Yes.
Like then you need to have staff to help manage that book. So it's not only that, you got to keep C.R. Smith running.
Yeah,
it's as big as the organization is, right? Like the importance a lot of times is as big as the organization is. If it's a very small operation, sole proprietor, right? Well, you don't need tons of this stuff, right? But once you get into partnerships and multi-layers, right? The more multifaceted, multi-layered it is, the more paperwork you need to cover off the different interactions and connections, right?
Well, and I think, you know, Doug, the president of the of Sierra Smith, the one that the three of us are buying out, you know, he jokes all the time. We locked that in 2018 in a buy sell agreement and had it financed on his life and the whole bit and critical illness. And I'm, you know, all joking aside, but he will basically say, where were we? We were all, hey, Mel, what's going on? Mel.
Thought we were abandoned.
Yeah. But he was out golfing. We were the four of us, as you know, we went out for a conference with Sun Life, which is our broker. And we've missed you too, Mel. Thanks for tuning in. And we flew out to BC and for a conference, and we had some downtime. And as you know, Dougie likes to golf. So Dougie went out golfing, and I'm sure a bunch of you have seen the pictures in the golf course where he was. Brown bears go on the golf course, and these cubs were like playing with the flag, which is hilarious. And you know, he's in the cart, and so his golfing partner goes and he takes a shot, and so Doug, in his infinite wisdom, goes and takes the cart, and he's like within like 10 feet of these cubs, and we're like, what the, and takes pictures. He's like, look what I saw. And the golfing partner turns around and he's like, what the hell are you doing? It's a brown bear. He's like, but I wanted to get a photo. And then we all joke, we're like, we almost had it. Almost at it, you know, and because he always jokes. He's like, insurance is the cheapest way to buy me out, boys. Mm-hmm. And like, because it is the truth. When you factor in the premiums that you have to pay, this is exactly what Josh was alluding to and what Jeff was alluding to. These premiums, when you cost per 1,000, is dirt cheap what you pay for in order to get the equity, in order to buy the person out. It is a line item on a balance sheet. I don't deny that. And it is sometimes hard to swallow, but you have to understand that, that's something that could have easily, and I say, like, I love Doug, and we all do, we all know him, but it easily could have gone the other way. Very quickly could have gone the other way.
Sure.
And, you know, the next thing you know, we're sitting there like in a surreal moment, and it's something that's extremely serious. And I get questions like, why am I worth dead more than alive? Well, it's called the time value of money. Do a calculation. If you take what you're making now, you index that to inflation, and you go until the day that you're retired, and you put into a calculator, okay, how much do I have to have in my account today in order to make that exact same amount of money? Well, when you factor in inflation, that's why you're worth dead more today than you are alive than what you're making. It's just a simple math equation.
Yep.
It's nothing like, you know, we don't just make this up. And then when you look at what Chez just finished saying about the organization, like he touched on a really key piece there. If even though Jeff wasn't making any income, like they were dividending themselves out, but like specifically T4 income, if he passed away, how is that income going to get replaced for the organization? Like, that's huge. So considering he's a founding partner. So these are all things that you have to look at. And these are all how governance and bylaws are done. And something that, you know, I've with my two other business partners, have relied heavily on Bondo and Jeff Chesbro for advice on how to structure different things. So I don't know. That's kind of key, I think. Anything else? Jeff, Chez, is there anything else that you are that we didn't?
You gotta just call
on,
him Jeff, because the Jeff thing is killing me.
Well, I mean, Jeff. I mean, each instance is different too, right, Brandon? And you and I are partners in a real estate investment group as well. And I sit on the board of that, and my role was literally, you know, here's the templated bylaws that we received, or the bylaws that were suited towards us as Josh's office helped us with. But there was literal decisions, you know, how does executive decisions get made? You know, one of the things I flagged, and it wasn't on anyone's, but it was, you know, that in the bylaws, the way it read, that two out of three people could have a meeting and the third one not be there and the decision be made. And that wasn't the intent of our group. So those are things we changed and said, no, we got to be 3 for 3 on any meetings. They're small things, but, you know, when we're all buddies, it's great. But these are the changes you make when, you know, stuff goes south in whatever way. And it's not that that's going to happen, but the idea is as a board member, I want to be able to tell the rest of the investors as well, you know, all of us have to be in the know. Because if I was an investor and they always sent the bylaws and they said, well, 2 out of 3, I'd be like, you only have 3. If you're like 12 out of 16, I get it.
Different story.
You can't line up 3 people and there's 13 people total in the group. No, doesn't fly with me.
Yep. Totally agree. Bondo, anything
but
else?
A lot of people don't think that way, Chez, right? But that's the thing, right? Like, a lot of people don't half-ass shit when it comes to your business. Don't half-ass it. Know about it. Read the paperwork, right? Like, there's certain things, like, we send you a final report after you buy a house. You can read it. Maybe not, right? You get a shareholders agreement or your bylaws. Read them, know what they're about. Make sure they're there. Make sure they make sense in terms of the way you want to run your organization.
Well, and if you don't, you're almost doomed to fail from the beginning, right?
Like, yeah.
Well,
you're doomed to fail without it.
The reality of it is, Jeff, no, right? Because 90% of the time, 95% of the time, you're going to be able to skate even with a piece of shit set of bylaws.
Right.
It's that 5%.
But that 5% blows up, Bondo. That 5%
becomes huge.
The world. So it's like, you know, going through Director's College and the innovation governance programs and things that I do, and I constantly go through McMaster and do courses as well at their Director's College. Like, I've been doing this for a bunch of years, and the whole point of it is ask questions. So even when I mentor my day job, I work with tech companies, and I ask questions. And, you know, I am only getting the information that those tech entrepreneurs are telling me. So it's not a full piece all the time, but I tell them out of the gate, listen, I play devil's advocate. These are not pointed questions. These are just questions I have. And when, you know, we always say around the board table, the question has to come from positive intent. Once you're trying to submarine or have those gotcha moments, I don't want to be on a board with you or be involved with you. Cause that's not what a board director isn't there to get you. They're there to bounce it off, to ask the questions, to have that, you know, we're not there every day, right? When
information gather, right?
You got it. When I'm sitting, I was on the board of an organization with $26 billion in assets. I'm not there every day. I'm there in cycles of committees and things. So I don't pretend to be smarter than anyone around the table. It's just ask those questions. And half the time, I have to be honest with you, I ask questions where everyone, I'm the guy who doesn't care about the emperor's not wearing any clothes. If I ask a stupid one the odd time, sure. A, you got to limit them, but B, it's hilarious when you ask a question and you see all the board directors just terrified because they're like, oh shit, I'll be like, page 16 is missing. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, it's missing a line too. Like, well, why did no one, no one say anything? Like, it, so like, there's, you know, you're there for a wee thing. It's the folks, as they said, but the whole goal is to ask questions and not ask every question. Because if you ask every question, the board meeting is going to go on forever. You got to, there's a focus. You got to know when to ask it. There's an art to this, but you know, in my day job, everything I do, I ask questions, as you guys would know.
Yep.
Listen, though, a lot of times the problem I've seen, I've sat on a lot of not-for-profit boards as well, is a good number of the people that are there are not there for the right reason.
Yep.
Right. Yep. And they're not putting in any time or effort more than what they have to achieve that very shallow goal.
But that's involved with, like, that's your governance and nominating committee too. And that's your culture of that board. I don't want to be on that board. If someone walks in and says, I didn't have time to read, get the hell out, because you're not doing any justice to A, your fellow board members, or B, the organization you're supporting, the CEO, the staff. Like,
I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't disagree, Chess.
But you're right. It's more common than uncommon, Mondo. Unfortunately, it's, you know, I put my name on it. I don't even know what sitting on a board really is. Yeah. You know, it looks good on my resume because I can say I was this and that.
Exactly. And
those are the ones where you're like, you know, I'll have a beer with you. I'd love to have a beer. Let's go for lunch. But I do not want to sit next to you on this. No. And sometimes we call them knife and forkers in the volunteer world, right? Yeah. You know, they come out for the free dinner, but they never do the heavy lifting, right?
Knife and forkers. Yeah. Did you coin that term? That was a really good term.
Probably back in the late 1800s, I did.
Yeah.
Put it on a shirt. Put it on a shirt.
There you go. Hashtag
knife and forker. I got my own shirt. We're going to make
our shirt. Hashtag knife and forker. But no, honestly, though, like, it's something that, Bondo, that's something that why one of the reasons that you and I both left the board. And it's another reason why that, as Jeff alluded to, we're part of a real estate corp. And one of the reasons you look at your board on why you're throwing in money. And that's the other thing, too, the people who are on the board. And I've said this publicly. I've said this to him. You know, him and I work, even though we bicker back and forth like an old married couple, it's because we've known each other for so long. We work very well together. And I've said this, there's a handful of people that I would literally, as long as that person's on the board, I'll be like, yep, I'll be there. And Chez is one of them, because I know that, or like, he'll ask the questions. Yeah. He'll ask the questions that I'm, you know, because of the one of experience, and two, there's a little bit of an age gap, not that much, but still there's that life experience that I might not know. And that's kind of like, all right, I'm willing to be in the shadows here just to kind of, because then I know at least, you know, the T's are going to be crossed and the I's are going to be dotted. And those are types of things that I look for. And I think everyone here, if we've touched on anything, the main theme, I guess you could say, is before you jump on a board, really do your research and your due diligence, and really, you know, reach out and ask around, get references, and ask a ton of questions in the nomination process, because don't, by just building your resume, it might sewer your resume if you're on the wrong one. And this is coming from experience. Now, I've never been sewered, but I've gotten on boards and I've quickly realized that I've made a mistake and have quickly got off boards. So it's something that I strongly encourage people to really take pause and to think about.
And I think the other thing is, you don't always have to ask those questions, Curry. If you know that there's a subject matter expert around the table that is going to ask those, or then defer them. Like,
that's what you want to try to get, right?
100%. I use an example, and there's a gentleman, he's a retired senior executive at Andrew Peller. And I sat on two boards, two Meridian, and I'll say Meridian Credit Union and CAA. And this gentleman, Pete Patchett, shout out to Pete. Pete asked those questions that I didn't know how to, couldn't even form the question. I knew something wasn't right, and I didn't know how to ask it. Pete was always that guy that asked that question. A, he did it thoughtfully, and B, he understood the material. And so, you know, when your spidey sense says something's off or you have a question, don't just ask right away. Kind of try to formulate it. But Pete was that guy for me that I loved, because I knew he was going to ask a question that I didn't even understand how to ask it.
And 100%, we're not going to know everything, right? You're not going to be 100% at the table. Don't go into it with that impression, because you're going to fail.
Yeah.
Right. We've all sat at the table scratching our heads saying, fuck it. You know what I mean? Like, this is, you know what I mean? What do we do with this? What do we do with this? Right.
Yeah.
And a lot of times somebody comes up and will generate it. Sometimes it'll be you. Sometimes it'll be somebody else, but you're thinking about it is the main thing. Right.
Yep.
But just look at one before we close it out. Look at, I've never dabbled too much in terms of private investing. Just time wise, but I definitely researched it. And one of the things that they told me to always focus on if I was going to do any form of armchair investing is who's on that board of directors.
Yep.
Right. What formulates the board of directors and what do they bring to the table?
Yep.
So
totally.
I mean, it's a paperwork is good. Your board of directors is key. We're not trying to discourage you from being directors, essentially. Right?
No. We're just going with your eyes wide open. I think there's all the guys' points of that experience. And just because they're a great person, you know, it doesn't mean they're a worker. And I mean, we've seen it. Collins, you're a big supporter of the charity we're all involved with. Lindy, we all work together, roll up our sleeves in an active volunteerism. We're not on the board. We're on a committee, different, and we're workers. And the ones that don't work get pretty much not asked back the next year because we don't need any of them. And even to the group, you know, I remember probably 5-6 years ago, we all asked the same people. We're all friends. We have the same network. And I remember making a comment to the groups and saying, no more buddies. No more buddies are coming in this group because we all ask the same people for the same stuff. You need to have diversity, and we need diversity of thought, diversity of workers, age, the rest of it. That's the other thing with filling boards. Do not fill a board up with five of you, right? Like, get someone else with a different.
100%.
You don't need two of me on a board. You know what a pain in the ass that would be? You know,
diversify as much as you can.
Yeah, thought, background, opinion, etc. But like, you know, as I said, you got to have it. You got to have it all over the place. And to that charity, the volunteer group that we're part of, you know, I love doing it with my buddies, but I don't want to see any more buddies on there because, you know, we have a
common
mission.
Thought.
We have a mission, you know. And last year, just for the listeners, last year the auction that we're all involved in, you know, it was a one in November. It was $160,000 raised in one night. You know, I think we did over 400,000 in our events last year. Brandon, clarify if that's right or not. Like, this is, and every penny goes in and every penny goes out, which we love. But we're not talking about raising $10 here. We're, you know, as I said, November, and I don't know the numbers from July yet. I actually have a meeting with our friend Smitty next week to go through these before our meeting. But, you know, this is a great impact when you look at capital projects in our region to say, you know, if we do 80 or we do 160, there's $80,000 of projects that don't get done. So we don't need knife and forkers. We need people like yourself, Jeff, who help donate, show up at the auction, donate prizes and help spend the money and share the wealth. And there's guys, you know, who we need to go like hustle. Bondo drops off 9 million prizes at my, at my house or Scotty's house or whoever. So we need all that. So when you're looking at a board, don't do it just because your buddies are on it or you all think the same, because it's, you know, you're all going to nod and agree with each other. And that doesn't necessarily do any good for the organization.
And on that note, we're just going to wrap, but we're not going to wrap up just yet. But, you know, Jeff, thanks very much for coming on. We would love to have you on again and to discuss some other topics of the day. Anytime that we think that there's a subject matter.
You might not want me on, because what I've done is I've tweeted the private chat to all your followers because I thought that's
great.
Interesting.
Beautiful.
The conversation within itself.
Isn't that good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's a,
nice.
Fantastic.
There's a lot of stuff going on in the private chat here, bro.
Yeah, lots of stuff going on in the private chat.
Jeff, they're still together.
Yeah, but before we...
Jeff, they're still together. After all that shit.
So, but the one thing that we want to go is Bondo. Any, you got a couple minutes? Topic that's happening right now, and then that you just want to keep... What? You're muted.
It's okay. He's got himself muted.
Yeah, he's got himself
really
muted.
Want to hear him anyways.
Okay. What a moron. Jesus.
We'll start with
your wrap up topic segment. That's what I was saying.
Yeah, wrapped up topic segment. Thanks. We couldn't read your lips.
Wrap up. You could read the lips there. I'm sure you could read it.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, the four letter word. I guess.
There's no music going. Like,
nah, not yet. Well, at the end, there is.
That's a good idea.
The final wrap-up should have its own theme music.
Jeff, you should get some, like, nice
Okay,
you know, Marvin Gaye or something beautiful. Sexy.
Once again, hey. there's my
like
addition.
A porno kind of backline, you know, like
Chicka Bow Bow.
Oh, Jesus. Oh.
Hey, Collins, they're still together, eh?
Who?
There we go.
Yeah. Love it. Go ahead, Bondo.
Maybe take him for hosting this, buddy.
So what's the topic there, Bondo? You got a couple minutes.
Love it. No. I was trying to kick a joke because I heard it on the Roz and Mocha show this morning, but nobody did on this freaking stupid podcast.
All right. What are you talking about?
I know. But anyways, no, kick it over to Jeff or something. I got nothing right now.
All right. Jeff, what do you want to talk about?
Jeff.
Collins.
Either one.
Collins. I found it interesting breaking news in the Standard today that Doug Ford will override municipal zoning to allow more housing across Ontario, confidential document reveals. Anybody see that today?
Yep.
I saw the title. I didn't read the article yet.
Me as a developer, got me excited and all that. But what I liked about it is he's claiming he's going to push through the red tape crap that we have to deal with all the time. I love the porno music, by the way. But the neat part about it is he's trying to put down, if you have a property, say a two-story, he's going to make it much quicker to make it a duplex or a triplex because they're trying to increase the amount of housing going on, because with this turn down in the market and the material still staying high, they're trying to find ways to create incentive for builders to do it. And the duplexes and triplexes, I think, are interesting. I just firmed up on a deal in Port Colborne where we're going to try to build some townhouses there with the buyer. And if we can turn them into duplexes as opposed to just townhouses, it'd be much more appealing to sell. So still got to make money as a developer and all that. I think the big thing they need to do, and this is a whole nother topic we should do one day. There's a lot of crap that happens when you're trying to push stuff through that in certain municipalities, two of the five councilors, whatever, three of the five councilors can say, no, shoot it down, and you've got to go through OLT to appeal it, and it's just adding on the cost and how long it takes to get it done. So it's
what's
frustrating.
OLT, Jeff?
The Ontario Land Tribunal. So if you're going to fight a decision by the councillors, you have to bring it to that. It says 2 to 3 months. When you talk to a lawyer to hire them to do it, they're telling you right off the bat 6 months minimum, $20,000 extra cost, 92% chance you'll win it, but you still got to go through it. So there's people who out there are trying to block you specifically to add cost to yours. And it's terrible because in the one case, I'm not going to say a municipality or anything like that, but I'm with a client of mine, the city planner's on board, everything's done properly. There's a $20,000 study that was done that says this is proper to get done. And a resident in the area has blocked it and doesn't want it to happen. So now my client is saying, well, can I even hang on to this for 6 more months to do it? Or should I just, you know, get rid of it? So he's in that case right now. And this article came out today. So we're trying to contact an MP or anyone. Actually, I'm trying to contact the journalist right now to see if this can expedite anything for my client. So it's really interesting because if they do something like that where it's not getting a duplex approved, where you can be right away approved, it could open up some ways to make money for builders who seem to be stepping back a bit right now, and they shouldn't be because we have a housing shortage. I found it an interesting article.
The whole
so
point
just
of
to,
that,
just
though,
to OMB became the LPAT and then became the OLT now.
Yeah,
so it's
called the acronym I'm using. I'm sorry, it was OMB, which was the headache.
Correct.
So as a builder or developer, if you ever had to go OMB, it's the biggest nightmare because it's delaying you 6 to 12 months. So it would like to expedite this. It doesn't seem like it's getting done at all. So what he did recently, which should be another topic we could do on one, where he's trying to give stronger powers in Toronto, I believe, in Ottawa to have the mayor have a strong power to push
city.
It through.
Yeah,
which
city.
A lot of people hate that. I love it because I have to deal with that in my industry all the time. That you have a perfect idea, you have proper studies done, a huge expense, which, to be honest, usually gets passed on to the final consumer, right? Who's going to pay for that somehow anyways. Because as a builder, you're not going to build a house if you're not making it profitable. You're not going to build for a loss. So it just gets passed on to you. You want to make affordable housing, you got to get rid of the red tape and all that stuff. So I just found it an interesting article. I want to see if it actually goes anywhere, if it's just more smoke out there, right?
I think it will go somewhere. I think it is. It's the.
I think he's trying to push it through no matter what.
The mayors. This is all joined, Jeff. The mayors, superpower, the large cities in this. They're definitely. You're going to see different tools come out. This
is a couple. To me, the biggest problem is it gets in the council's hands, and a lot of them don't read the reports you give to them, right? And they just say no. I don't like that.
Don't read.
Test them on the damn thing you gave them that you spent $20,000 on it. Did you read it? Well, you know, football was on Thursday or whatever. I couldn't get it done. Sorry,
but yeah, I didn't need to watch or read it. Yeah, sorry.
So it's, you know, if you've got a city planner from a municipality who's saying, I will go to trial for you because this should go through. What the hell?
I know.
And you know? Trust part me. Of the what? Reason behind that article though is because of urban densification. Right? They're pushing for that. We recently had it in Niagara where regional council passed, it's all a number, right? And Jeff, you and I have talked about it, where essentially they're increasing the urban density from 50% to 60%, even though the Ontario government said it doesn't make sense to be doing so. But that's where this article is coming from, right? If it's duplex, triplex, fourplex, anything multifamily, that's what they want to do.
Yeah, makes it affordable, right? That's the way they're doing it, by making it
takes up less space too, right?
Attached housing.
Yes.
Well, stacked houses, right? They're big
choices, enough. Right? Expand out or expand
Jeff's
up.
Jeff's loving the porn music here.
No, and no one even hears it anymore. That's the best. Just blends in. It's the best conversation. Very smart. This is the most highbrow conversation of the last hour and a half. Yeah, we're listening to porn music in the background. So I don't know Rook, but great job.
But you know what, I'd say Curry, see if you can find a Niagara councillor that would come on and kind of talk about that situation, because I'd love to hear what they say.
Well, we can
about
get the former mayor. We can get Mayor Walter Senzig on, who's actually against the Strong Mayor program, and I'd like to have that debate because that'd be kind of cool to have his piece on it. But then this goes back to, like.
You're too into the music.
Right?
You're too into the music right now. You're like,
oh. It is. Like, it's such great music. And then Mel just asked a question. She just got her survey back, just waiting for the bank to get back to me on a line of credit to build the garage apartment. Oh, yeah. That's right. Nice. We talked about that a couple weeks ago, right? Like a couple of episodes ago. She was in on what a pain in the ass that is, wherever she is. Yeah.
Red tape equals pain in the ass and money.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
And but that's government, right?
Yeah.
That's all. But trust me, that red tape is the shit that we were talking about earlier a lot of times that makes good governance, right? Policies, true. Procedures. Sometimes it's too thick.
The checks and balances, it is. It just depends on how much you have built up, right? It's easy to add rules. Hey, we'll just add this. We'll just do this.
Yeah, you got to clean it.
And your $20,000 report, Jeff, the thing is that, you know, the three neighbors of that counselor came over and said, you know what? That's those guys are competing with my other buddy. They're bad. I wouldn't approve them. They're bad people. Oh, okay. I wouldn't even read it. Then
that's 100% what happened. 100% what happened. And everybody says, "Well, you can win this, no problem." 6 months carrying costs and $20,000 in legal fees.
Yeah.
You know, which works up to another $60,000, which can now
stress, headaches, right?
Well, look at all the projects in St. Catharines that got shut down because of the shipyards wanting to rezone for residential at our shipyards here. Every project had to go, like, because one group stopped it, and it stopped every development here, and not just the one. So, and then Jeff, who pays for that?
Taxpayers.
Yeah.
The developers and taxpayers.
The final consumers pay.
Right. So Jeff looks at it and goes, "I got to float this, and then I got to sell it. And if the price is ahead of the market, I'm not doing it."
Yeah. And that's why right now, because of rising interest rates, there is a third of all construction projects in the GTA right now have either been canceled or put on indefinite holds. Yeah. A third, 33% of all construction projects.
I didn't know it was that high, Trev.
Yeah, it's insane.
Mel, just do it. Don't tell anyone.
I actually just told everybody.
Sorry about that. You actually just told everybody. Sorry about that.
We call that inside voice. Inside voice.
Inside voice. Yeah. Inside voice, Mel.
Yeah, unfortunately, some viewers aren't allowed to be in the private chat, or no viewers are. So.
Here's my little spiel. Quit being assholes out there, people, right? Just stop being assholes to one another. We pulled another pin today. We had a sale transaction, and the guy was, it was through a power of attorney, and the guy was incapacitated. And of course, he had 10 freaking registrations, notice of security interest, people selling them a HEPA filter, 10 of them, a furnace. Just quit being assholes. Stop it. Stop being assholes.
What stuff? Like,
I love the porn music in the background.
Lindy, do you have any anything else to add? Anything like
yeah,
you
want to
say? That's another so
I'll,
shirt.
I'll
that's
add real shirt. Quick. Obviously, we're this is live October 21st. So anybody listening to it after the fact, Bank of Canada meets next Wednesday, October 26th, for their eight predetermined meetings. So it's their seventh meeting of the year. December 6th will be the last one. Who knows what'll happen?
0.25.
No, well, 0.75. A lot of economists are calling for 0.75% increase. Benjamin Tall was just speaking. Benjamin Tall, for those that don't know, is the chief economist over at CIBC. One thing that CIBC does right is they keep him happy and they keep him around because he's one of the best out there and so well respected in the entire world. He was speaking to the Mortgage Professionals Canada conference in Vancouver this past week, 16th and 17th, and he basically said his anticipation is a half a point increase. He was alluding to, there's a high likelihood that we could see 75 or 1 point before the end of the year. So whether that be the October meeting and the December meeting or just the October meeting, but he basically said his opinion is that where if the Bank of Canada goes 0.75 or 1 point, it will be catastrophic for our economy. Don't expect to see any decreases on the overnight lending rate into 2023. It's going to remain flat, and we definitely need to have at least 2 to 3 quarters where there is zero increases, because keep in mind, for we've talked about it before, inflation is a measurement of what's happened in the past, not what's currently happening. And they have not stopped and taken any breaks on these increases. So we need to see something. We need to see some stability where there's nothing happening. And he feels that 2023, there will be nothing until 2024. And then we'll probably have some decreases out there, but don't expect them to go back to, the historic lows that we had, through 2020, 2021. So that's my piece. Hopefully we'll see. I'm hoping we don't have any more increases, because we did see inflation drop by a small percent, by 0.2%, I think it was. It went down to 6.9. So that's my piece.
Harry, all right. Your piece. It's a piece of what you just did in the bathroom.
The music got you, man.
You're like, yeah.
No, the music did not go. Oh, boy.
You look dehydrated all of a sudden.
Oh, God. No, I don't really have... everything that... touch on the recession later on, and we'll see. Basically, I'm going to hold off my comments on to the next episode, which is in 2 weeks' time.
Hockey Canada, and, the Jays, you got something, Curry.
Yeah, well, there's a lot.
And Leafs just, big victory last night. Woo!
Big victory.
Robertson.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting, Robertson.
Robertson greater than Caulfield.
Potted two.
Potted two.
So, yeah, other than that, no, just I echo Trevor's comments on the economy. Him and I talk about it quite a bit on the impact that interest rates are going to have on the economy. And I hope that, they don't tank the economy, but I think that's inevitable, to tell you the truth. I think we're on a crash course.
I think they're looking to do it on purpose, yeah, if they want to.
Yeah, I think so. Yep. Anyway, Bondo, you want to, thanks to all again to Brand Boulevard. Thanks again to all of our listeners and watchers, and Mel for chiming in. That's great. Great to see you guys.
Thanks for coming on.
For Brand Boulevard. Thanks to Jeff Jesbro for coming on.
The new host of Professional Insight.
New host for Professional Insight.
There you go.
And
Curry, you're Bondo. Out. Chesden.
That's right.
Well, that's happened many times before, but go ahead.
He's reading his shit beforehand. That's what
there I am. God. See you, Mel. See you in 2 weeks.
Thanks,
Bondo.
Thanks, folks, for having me on. I really appreciate it. I think you guys are doing a hell of a job. And if I didn't, you'd know why that, too. So,
yeah,
you're genuinely here, bud.
Thank you.
Thank you, Odie. Help us help you stay informed.
Ciao. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Emily Roger, and I host a leadership show called The Boiling Point with my co-host, Dave Vail. Together, we sit down with trailblazing entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers who are driving meaningful change in our world. The show is all about exploring the lives and perspectives of leaders who are making a difference. Join us for insightful conversations that challenge the status quo, spark new ideas, and inspire you to take action. Find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, or at BoilingPointPodcast.com.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first five episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Produced by Crier Media and distributed by the Sound Off Media Company.